This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Lots of kids playing baseball in their backyard fantasize about someday going to the big leagues. They see that scoreboard. They can hear the fans roar as they step up to the plate and smack a home run. For a very few, this childhood dream becomes a reality, but the road to the majors takes patience and persistence and a bit of luck. To get there, a player usually has to climb through the minor leagues first. The Durham Bulls are one of the more well-known minor league teams, thanks to the 1988 movie Bull Durham. For decades, the Bulls have given players a chance to compete at the highest level in the minors. The majors, just a phone call away. Joining me now are members of the Durham Bulls. Mark Sappington is a pitcher with the team. Hello, Mark.
Hey, greetings.
Good to have you here. Luke Maley is a catcher. Hello, Luke. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here.
Ozzie Timmons, hitting coach for the Bulls, also played with the Bulls in the 90s and early 2000s. And with the majors. Ozzie, welcome. Good to have you here.
Oh, glad to be here, Frank.
Luke was up with the majors for a little bit, too. Mark, tell us, we'll start with you, because about a little over a month ago, you were playing double-A ball, right? And you called up pretty recently. Am I right about that?
Yeah, something like that. It was last year, as we ended the season, I was still in double-A, and then we had camp. And when we broke camp, they said, hey, Mark, welcome to Durham. I said, well, I still got to drive 9 hours there.
What's the transition like?
Man, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, it's been, you know, you have your ups and your downs, but I think the biggest difference is, like, guys are just more disciplined at the plate when you're pitching. I mean, like, they spit on pitches that are, you know, that you used to get swings on. They take those, and just a little bit more of the sequencing side of pitching, you know, throwing up in the zone, down in the zone, stuff like that. Other than that, it's just, you know, having the crowd is it's pretty cool when you get 9,000-10,000 people screaming at you.
And it's a noisy crowd, and they know the game. It's kind of fun here in Durham. I don't know how we compare, but I'll ask you that in a minute. Luke, this is your second season with the Bulls. How would you describe AAA ball to people who may not be familiar?
It's unlike anything else. I mean, you know, we'll get into more of it, I'm sure, as we go on. But, I mean, the thing that AAA that sticks out about AAA for me is just the different emotions that each guy will have. Because you're so close, but you're so far away, and there's a lot of things that are really just out of your control. So it's definitely it's a unique job. I mean, I really don't think there's anything like it. Certainly there's things that are more difficult, but in terms of the uniqueness, I don't think there's anything like it.
Ozzie, you've been in a position to do both. You played, now you're coaching, and that's got to be a difficult spot because, you know, as Luke just said, you're one call away. That's got to be a big part of what's on your mind as a player, and you're trying to get these guys ready for today's game now in a team sport. What are the challenges for you?
The challenge is to keep them focused on what they have to do here. As long as you do your job here, you'll get the call. But if you're worrying about what's going on up top, then that's when the problems and the struggles start to happen. But if you can focus on what you have to do at the time that you're here, control the controllables, as they would say, don't worry about things you can't control, then you should be okay. But if you start thinking about, you start looking ahead too soon, then the game will come and bite you a little bit.
Well, Mark, you know, that on the one hand, that sounds pretty reasonable, like take care of business today, then you get the call because you've done well. But as a player, what is the challenge to keep focused as you're imagining maybe I'm 10 minutes away from that phone call? What is the tension there, and how hard is that to stay focused?
Yeah, I think it can be difficult, but it's like I try to live in, like, day-tight compartments, you know, like today is, what, May 9th? So, like, how can I make May 9th the best day possible, you know? And it doesn't mean that, oh, man, I'm going to live today like I'm dying, so I'm going to go, like, climb a mountain and then go skydiving. It's like, okay, I take care of my business, and then I allow, you know, you just, I mean, everybody talks about, you know, embracing the process, trusting in the process, but that's really what you have to do, especially at this level. I mean, like Luke said, I mean, you have so many different opportunities that seem so close but so far. And if you get caught up in those, then you lose the, you know, kind of where today is. And then you look at yourself a week down and it's like, man, what just happened? I just gave up 8 runs or I just went 0-for-15, you know, something like that. And you're just like, man, you snap back into it. And it's like, how do you keep that to one day if you fall off the track just a little bit instead of 2 or 3 or 4.
Well, Luke, you've had some experience. In fact, you were bumped up to the majors last September, right? What was the biggest difference for you when you went up to play Major League Ball?
Well, I mean, everything's different except for the game. The game is really pretty similar. I think the best way to describe it is you've got two superheroes in each lineup, basically. You know, the guys that you're watching on ESPN every night. Those, you know, your David Ortiz's, your Jose Bautista's, I'm talking AL East guys, because that's pretty much the only teams that I played against up there. It just happened to work out that way. So you got two of those in each lineup, and then everybody else looks like somebody in a Durham Bulls uniform. And I tell fans all the time, if we had just on generic black and white uniforms and you just took a bunch of AAA players and a bunch of big league players, you'd probably just be flipping a coin on trying to pick which one's in the big leagues and which one's in AAA.
Now, Ozzie, yeah, let me ask you about that, because it does seem to me that the athletic difference between the major and minor league players has to be minuscule, and there are probably some mismatches, right? Some guys who should come down and guys who should go up quite clearly. So I guess it's all in your head then. I mean, the difference, because if you can throw a 95-mile-an-hour fastball here at the park in Durham, that's a 95-mile-an-hour fastball in any park in the country, right?
That is true.
Yeah. So what's the difference in terms of if you get called up, when you got called up, for instance, do you think about it as a different game? These are different guys somehow, but you know athletically they're not that much different.
No, just like I tell guys when they do go up, it's the same game. Nothing's changed. The plate's still the same size. The pitcher has to throw the ball over the plate, and you still got to hit the ball. The part that gets you is the atmosphere, because my first time up in the big leagues was in Chicago. So I tell people, they was like, were you nervous your first at bat? I go, no, I've been hitting all my life. So like I said, you still got to throw the ball over the plate, and I still got to swing. But the day for me that it hit me was you standing there in the National Anthem, middle of the National Anthem, the fans start going crazy. It's 20 degrees in Chicago, and you're like, wow, this is the big leagues.
Yeah.
But the baseball side of it is no different. But you have to go up there with that confidence knowing that you can do it. But if you don't, then that's what gets you. That's why guys don't stay. If you believe in yourself when you step up there, the guy still has to try to get you out, and you still got to try to get a hit.
Well, let's talk about how you got here, Mark. Tell us about you. Did you grow up thinking you were going to play baseball? Was that your fantasy, the one I described in the intro?
You know, I didn't have like that thought at like 7 or 8 years old, like, I'm going to play in the big leagues someday. I mean, that wasn't my path. I mean, I loved baseball. I was always a pretty happy-go-lucky kid, you know. Parents always trying to calm me down because I had all this energy. And, but I always played, and I always worked hard. My parents always got me to all the games. I have 5 brothers and sisters, and so, you know, we were all, like, sports was our outlet. You know, we didn't get to go on many vacations or do that, but we always got to play sports. And so in doing that, I think it really just that was my passion, I guess. I mean, I played football, did high jump and baseball in high school. So then when I moved into college and started just focusing on one sport, it was kind of a difficult transition. But then as I grew in the sport, I kind of understood, wow, I might have an opportunity to play after college. And then once that, you know, you kind of get that spark of like this quote unquote dream is actually attainable, then, you know, the pieces start lining up. Your work starts, you know, being catered towards, you know, just kind of attaining that. And I guess that's kind of where I found it was, yeah, probably when I was 20. I had a coach who really invested in me named Daryl Kronk. And he's a coach back in Kansas City now. But, man, he taught me a work ethic. And once I learned that, that's when I knew that I had a chance.
Well, you had to embrace it. I mean, there's a lot of coaches who can teach you that, but at the age of 20, apparently, you were about ready to take that seriously because you thought it would take you somewhere.
Yeah, it was, you know, I think seeing the fruits of your labor, once you start working hard or someone believes in you and, like, pushes you and asks more of you than you've ever asked yourself, and you see that you can do it, then it's like, wow, this is my new reality. You know, I got a new baseline. And so once I got there, I think that was, you know, just to have someone that was willing to invest in me time, energy, then that just showed me that, man, I can do this.
But you were taking it fairly seriously. You grew up in Peculiar, Missouri, did you?
Yeah.
There is a Peculiar, Missouri.
Town slogan, where the odds are with you.
You know? This is great.
Never graduated from that one.
You played though regularly, and you were consistent, right? Except I understand that you missed really only one game.
Oh man, yeah, I was 12 years old. So I grew up. I was homeschooled, so a little bit more. And we were, you know, always immersed in sports or activities. So it wasn't like we just sat at home and did nothing.
Well, a fairly big family too, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you had to learn how to talk or else you weren't going to get any attention. What? Sorry, brothers and sisters. I was playing for this team. We were called the Marlins. And, man, one day my mom, like, one of my chores was to empty the dishwasher. My mom had asked me to do it, and I said, all right. And then she asked me again like 10 minutes later. And then like an hour later, she asked me again. I said, all right, and the third time. And eventually, I didn't do it. And my dad said, well, Mark, he's like, guess you're just not going to go to your game tonight. I never forgot to empty it. Well, I think I may have forgotten the first time, but I never forgot after that again, because that was that's one punishment that stuck with me for, what, 13 years now? But, you know, it's fun now because you learn that discipline. Yeah. And, man, that was especially with Mother's Day yesterday. You know, we always
– Do you find yourself emptying other people's dishwashers just to make sure?
Man, on occasion. Usually it's making my bed. You know, I still make my bed in a hotel. My parents didn't make me do that, but, you know, it was
That's discipline.
That was
Mark
the worst Sapik. Punishment of all time.
A pitcher making him relive his traumatic past here on the State of Things. A pitcher for the Durham Bulls, Luke Maley is here. He's a catcher, and Ozzie Timmons is one of the team's hitting coaches. And we're talking about minor league baseball today on the State of Things, and there's more ahead on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, and joining me today, members of the Durham Bulls minor league baseball team. Mark Sappington is a pitcher for the team. Luke Maley is a catcher. Ozzie Timmons is one of the team's hitting coaches. So, Luke, let's find out a little bit more about you. You grew up in Northern Kentucky, right? So grew up watching the Reds.
Huge Reds fan.
Yeah.
I remember the first team I ever played for was a coach's pitch team, and they were called the Cubs. You know, they just kind of give, like, the generic teams, you know. The team that got the Reds, I was so jealous of, man, because, like, I just grew up going to those games. They played at Riverfront Stadium, which was just one of the cookie-cutter places. And I know, like, talking to Ozzie, I know he played there. I know the players hated it in general, but that was, like, my home. I mean, I just I grew up going to those games, man, a lot of nostalgia, and they tore that place down. That was really one of the saddest days of my life, believe it or not. Yeah, so I was a huge Reds fan.
When did you get the bug? When did you decide you wanted to play Major League Ball?
For as long as I can remember, I think the first Reds game I went to, I was probably a year and a half, maybe 2 years old. And the only reason I remember it is just the fireworks. Anytime they'd hit a home run, they'd blast fireworks out over like the Ohio River, and I was terrified of those. But it was sort of like a, you know, it's kind of jogged my memory as something where it was like, you know, I want to be out there, because for whatever reason in my head, I knew, like, okay, I'm not going to hate the fireworks if I'm out there, you know, only when you're a fan. So.
That's right. And yeah. You could wear a helmet. They've
got
little helmets for you if you wanted
correct.
To protect yourself. When did you decide to when did you start playing catcher?
I would probably say around 9 or 10. I mean, I know I kind of messed around with it a couple times. You know, the early – when you're playing, when you're really young, everybody kind of just moves around and you don't really have a set position. I was always pretty good. I was always really athletic out there. So I think I played a lot of shortstop. You know, when you're that young, you tend to have the more athletic kids up the middle that are actually getting the ground balls and things like that. But I got to be about 10, and I had a coach named Bill Holliker. And he was a catcher. He thought that I had a pretty good arm. He stuck me back there and just fell in love with it. So around that age,
you played at the University of Kentucky. So that was a bigger school. You were a Division I school than what Mark I think was playing in college. Or did you play Division I?
No, I was Division II. Kentucky, man. That's like one of the biggest schools in the nation, right?
There you go. So you were playing that. So how does that prepare you? Because, you know, a lot of guys don't finish college. We just had the UNC student government president was a guy who played minor league ball for a while and then left baseball and just went back to school, finished up. So does it make a difference going to a college like that for your career?
Well, I can only speak from my experience. I know there's guys, some of the best players I've ever played with came from D3 or you know, junior college is what they call it. A lot of guys play junior college ball, at least in this sport. I don't know if it really matters as much as it sort of just prepares you for the bright lights, and it sort of prepares you for, you know, you have to perform. Those guys that are coaching at that level are making a bunch of money nowadays. And so if you're not performing, you're probably going to find yourself on a bench or on your way out. So that piece of it is good, because in pro ball, that's definitely how it works. I'm sure it's the same way at other schools too, but I just think it might be a little bit more heightened at a D1 place like that.
You were drafted out of school in 2012, right?
Yes.
What was that like? What's the draft process and how you experienced it?
I had a blast. I know a lot of people talk about how stressful it was. I never ran into that. I mean, it's literally, like I was saying before, I mean, I've been waiting for that day for my entire life, so I didn't really care so much. Obviously, I wanted to go early, but, you know, I thought I went early enough. I was satisfied.
Ozzie, talk about, you played for the Bulls back in the 90s, right? So you were playing in the other stadium for a while, right?
I was a visitor. I was in Winston-Salem, Winston-Salem Spirits back in the day when we played here as a visiting team. Then I was here playing with these guys in 2000 at the new stadium.
What's it like for you? Now, you've seen a lot of changes, though. I mean, obviously, even as a visitor in this city, in terms of how the city of Durham has embraced this team.
Yeah, I mean, 2000, we still had good fans, great fan base, but all of this stuff over here right now wasn't here. The only thing that was here was the Fox Building, the Tobacco Road restaurant, not here. So a few of my home runs just went into empty space instead of fans sitting out there eating. And back to the Division One, Division Two, me and Mark are Division Two guys.
Yeah.
So I went to the University of Tampa. But, yeah, we look forward to playing the University of Kentucky's back in the day to try to prove a point.
You never wanted to play those teams, man. When I was at Kentucky, any of those teams that you scheduled like an exhibition with, you knew they were going to come for you.
Yeah, we came out hard.
Well, it does seem like it's a lot different in professional, in college football. It seems like, sort of Division One teams, that really is the graduation. That's sort of the minor leagues for football. So it seems to work much differently in football than it does in baseball.
Oh, no doubt. But like Luke was saying, baseball is you just want to be able to play. If you go to a school where you can play, that's the best thing that can happen. So for me, I had Division One offers, but Division Two told me that I was going to play right away, or I had a chance to compete to play right away. And some guys I see now, me going to University of Tampa, a lot of kids transfer from Division One to Division Two because they're not getting what they expected when they went to Division One. And then I guess when you transfer from Division One to Division Two, you don't lose a year of eligibility. So I see a lot of guys transfer there, and then they get to play, and then they go from there playing every day too.
It just occurs to me, though, it makes scouting a little bit more complicated. It means you've got a lot more territory to look at when you know there might be good players scattered all over the planet.
Well, as far as the Rays are concerned, we got scouts in all parts of the United States. So it's well covered by a lot of scouts. There are plenty of scouts out there.
So, Mark, let's talk about the trials and tribulations of playing this game, particularly minor league ball. There's a lot of uncertainty just in day-to-day, again, waiting for that call. You were actually traded in the middle of a game?
Yeah, that was, great story.
I was there for it.
Luke Maley, who knew? The guy I'm pitching to now would be the guy that – So I got traded. It was November 5th, which is my mom's birthday. Happy birthday, Mom, back then. And happy Mother's Day. I love you a ton. So we're in the middle of the game. I go in, and I throw the eighth inning. And, this is November, so we've been playing since spring training in February, and I'm pretty gassed. And so I go out there. I throw, I don't throw particularly well, but I get a good result. And I remember coming out onto the bench, and they're like, hey, you're done. And so I was sitting there, and I was just laughing with some of the guys. I was like, man, I'm glad I'm not going out there for another inning because I did not feel good. And then we're all just laughing, healthy. I was healthy, but it was just like, whoa. So
did you really do that on the bench? Because I've never seen a pitcher do that.
I guarantee you did. Okay. I guarantee it.
Tell you what, this is life is good, baby. So I get my pitching coach at the time, Matt Wise. He walks over to me with a phone, and I was like, oh my goodness. Halloween was 6 days prior. I didn't act out or do anything too wild. So, I was just like, I don't think I've done anything that would merit a phone call from someone telling me that I'm in trouble. So I said, okay. I get the phone, and it's Bobby Scales, who is our head of player development. Ozzie, you probably know Bobby because he played with the Cubs, right?
Yep.
He's like, Sap, this is Bobby. He's like, congratulations, you've just been traded to the Tampa Bay Rays. And I was like, I froze for a second. I'm in like the hall. We're in Mesa, or we're like basically Tempe, Arizona. And it was like someone getting in a car crash. They tell you like everything, your life flashed before your eyes. Like my baseball career flashed before my eyes as far as like with the Angels, because that was the only team I knew. It's kind of like, it's like your first girlfriend, It's like, man, I think I'm going to marry this girl, And it's like, oh, well, hey, guess what? we're trading you for somebody who looks better than you, bud.
Your girlfriend's dad just called, moving to Tampa.
Yeah, you're out like a Brussels sprout. So it moved me right on. But it was awesome.
Well, how bad? I mean, seriously, on a trade, I assume that means that they felt like they could do without you. I mean, to some extent, but also it doesn't necessarily mean, is that what that means always? Or does that mean, no, wait, you're good and we can get something for you.
Right.
We need something that you're, you know, we have plenty of pitchers and I guess right. You never have plenty.
It's like somebody wants you, you know, and so the Rays wanted me. So that's obviously very, you know, it's a beautiful thing. It's always great to be wanted. But at the moment, you know, in that moment, it was like, man, like they just shipped me off, you know?
Yeah, because, like, if you get traded to the garden shop at Home Depot, then you think, oh, gee, I really lost something.
You know, I'm a Petunia fan, so well, that then probably, yeah.
The thing about that is, though, like, I mean, not to cut you off, but the...
No, go ahead.
The thing about fans that everybody's always talking about... Thanks, I will. Everybody's always talking about, you know, on blogs or, you know, let's take the Reds where I grew up. Everybody's always saying, well, you know, they should trade this guy for this guy and trade this guy. And so you kind of become the idea of a player having an actual life gets lost. Mm-hmm. So what Sapp's talking about, I've never been traded, but I can tell you if I ever did, I mean, that would devastate me. I mean, I'd be excited and I'd move on, but not devastate you to the point where you don't feel wanted, but it devastates you because it turns your life upside down. You know, I mean, you're moving different cities. You're trying to plan when your family's coming out next. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you're doing a complete 180 and you're at the mercy of what this team does with you. So that's one thing fans, I think, get lost when they talk about they should trade this guy. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it.
See, and on the good side of the trade part, I got traded too. But when I got traded from the Cubs to the Reds, I was getting sent back to AAA. But when I got the trade, I got moved back to the big leagues. So on the good side of it, All right, the Cubs are going to send me to AAA, but then the Reds needed somebody in the big league. So that's the good part of getting traded, too.
We'll talk more about this uncertainty. And, Luke, let me go back to you. The idea that you really do have to be ready to move every minute. You're going to go down in the off season. You're going to be practicing other places and working out, maybe playing with teams in winter leagues. What's that like on your family? I mean, even if you stay with one team, it seems to me that uncertainty and the amount of moving you have to do. Describe that. How much moving around do you have to do in a normal year? Will you stay put on a team?
Well, it becomes normal to us. I mean, we're all used to it. But I think it gets lost on us, what fans don't realize, and then vice versa. Some of the things that happen are pretty much you're at the mercy of living in, out of a suitcase starting on February the 15th, whenever spring training starts. Because, you know, you're constantly renting places out, you know, to live, and there's not a lot of places that do 2-month rentals or 6-week rentals. So, you know, just the constant battle with finding somewhere comfortable to live, somewhere safe, you know, if your family does decide to come in, it is not easy. And, you know, no disrespect to minor league cities, but they're minor league cities for a reason. Durham's an exception, but some of the places we go to, it's not easy to find a place that you can bring your wife or your kid in or whatever. So it's very difficult.
And I think it's like the affordability too. Like, because then, I mean, if you were to make $2,000 a month, and in order to get a place for your wife and kids, it's going to cost you $1,150 or $1,200 for, you know, a simple 2-bedroom safe place. You know, that's only $800, and that's pre-tax. So, I mean, like, and we know what we're signing up for. So that is not a pity party at all. So I hope no one takes that. It's just like opportunity, you know, you do have to really game plan. So, you know, that's why Craigslist is a wonderful place to find a place to live, you know?
And if you need any help, ask Mark. He will help you.
Yeah, yes, Mark, are you pretty good at this, finding places?
I'd say I'm above average.
Mark's good at a lot of things. One of them is meeting people and getting them to like him immediately. Uh-huh. So if you ever need a hookup, if you ever need a ride and you don't have like an Uber app for whatever reason,
call Mark.
Mark will flag you down the first person he sees. I'm telling you, he's good at it.
Well,
Uber Zappington. Hey, so that
man, this is a new nickname, baby. Let's go.
Will I see it up on the Jumbotron?
We can make it happen.
Luke, this raises the question. What you just did raises a question to me about the psychological care that a catcher must take for his pitcher. To what extent are you trying to get into the head of the pitcher? And, you know, when you walk out there, you know them better than they do. I mean, is that true?
Yeah, to an extent. It depends on the guy. I mean, the first thing is, if the guy's throwing strikes and he's got his best stuff, it doesn't matter what's in his head or what's going on. It doesn't matter. It doesn't even matter what fingers you put down sometimes. I'll give you a good example. Blake Snell is one of the starters for our team. And at one point in one of his starts this year, I called 16 straight fastballs, right? I mean, just not even, just right down the middle. And he just punched out everybody and got a couple pop-ups. So on days like that, it really doesn't matter. But there's certain times where you can see a guy is struggling, or he's doubting himself, and you do kind of have to be a little bit of a mind reader. But I think that the relationship begins and ends with trust. You know, from a pitcher standpoint, their stuff begins and ends with a repeatable delivery. For the pitcher-catcher relationship, it begins and ends with trust. And I think once you have that, you're able to have a little bit more free conversation.
Because, you know, here's what we think really happens out on the mound. My entire idea about what's going on the mound was informed by this one scene in a 1988 movie.
Excuse me, what the hell's going on out here?
Well, Nuke's scared because his eyelids are jammed and his old man's here. We need a live, rooster? We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present. Is that about right?
That's right.
We're dealing with a lot of
Okay, well, candlesticks always make a nice gift, and maybe you can find out where she's registered, maybe a place setting or maybe a silverware pattern. Okay, let's get to it. Here we go.
There you go. There's a clip from Bull Durham. We play that every year, and now we've done it. So my year is complete. I'm actually going on vacation. See you in January. But Luke, you talked about this trust, and I'm sure that's a serious thing, the idea that you really do have this relationship. How serious are the conversations out there? Do you really have to talk, or are you just out there just kind of calming somebody down? How much chatter really has to happen to make things change?
There's a lot of variables. I mean, I've had conversations like the ones you just played from that movie. I mean, sometimes they really do happen, especially if you just need to get a guy to lighten up. Yeah. And again, it depends on the personality. I think the catcher's job is to get the best out of his pitcher that day. And whatever means you have to do that, sometimes you have to kind of crawl down his throat a little bit. That's not the way I personally like to go about it, but it does happen. Most of the time you're trying to get a guy to put something into perspective. And what that means for me is if you got a guy that's made a couple bad mistakes, how can you get him to concentrate on what's in front of him and not what's happened behind him? And then the other thing, too, this kind of ties into the AAA thing, is some guys, they think that this next pitch is going to dictate whether they're on a plane the next morning or not going to the big leagues. And a lot of times what you have to tell them is, you know, look, everybody knows you can pitch, or, hey, you know, your fate's kind of already sealed one way or another. Let's just get this guy out. So there's a lot of things that come into play.
What about on the coaching side generally, Ozzie? I mean, I'm assuming that once you get to AAA, you've got most of your fundamentals. Are you drilling fundamentals, or is, again, you just trying to get a guy to understand that they can do this, bringing them back to what they know? How much of this is teaching, and how much of this is asking them to remember how good they are?
Well, a lot of it is asking them to remember how good they are. I mean, they already got the talent.
Yeah.
That's not the problem. It's just sometimes you just got to get that mental focus. And with hitting, I mean, it's tough. These guys are trying to get you out. The pitcher's trying to get you out. The guys, eight guys out there trying to catch the ball. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have more failure than success. But on the times that you have failure, you try to learn from it. Now, fundamentals, you might have to correct something every now and then at this level, but most of the time it's just more mental. You know, you just, like, for example, Taylor Motter, he's struggling right now, but he's hitting the ball hard. But he wants his hits. I understand that. He'd rather have a jam shot right now just because that average goes up. And you see it on the board every day. But in reality, he's actually having really good at-bats. So you got to take the positives out of it and try to leave the negatives out, because there's enough negativity anyways as a hitter.
Can you tell just by looking at a player sort of what's going on, whether it's something they've forgotten or something that's gone out of their swing or something in their head?
Oh, yeah, sometimes. I mean, you see guys jumping at balls because they're trying to attack the ball, trying not to get jammed. For example, Richie Schaefer right now has a bruised thumb. He got jammed a couple of times. So now he's going to cheat to try to get the bat head out a little quicker so he don't get jammed again.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just staying with his process. And if you stay with your process, good things will happen. But sometimes they might happen a little slower than what you want them to happen. So, you know, you just try to keep them confident and just keep telling them everything's going to be all right. And you keep doing your work. You just trust your work. It's going to transfer.
Mark, what about what goes through the pitcher's mind? Again, what Luke was talking about, you know, you've had a few bad pitches, maybe you've had a whole bad inning, and there you are on the mound, and it's not looking good. You know, the batter's pretty much is one up on you, and, you know, whatever the situation is, you can imagine the situation. How do you stay focused in a time like this? And can you remember a time when you just plain lost it? You said, "My God, this is crazy. I'm going to get traded to."
Sure.
Something's bad.
I remember one distinct moment last year. It was I came in, threw five pitches, I think, and got two outs. You know, we're up 10-0, and I just came in the ninth because that was just the way the cards fell. And so, yeah, bottom of the ninth, and next thing I know, I give up a little, two little dink hits, and I'm like, all right, let's go. And then we have, you know, I throw a strike, defensive indifference guys, you know, go to second and third, and I'm like, need to go, you know, like, and I'd been working, you know, kind of backwards to get my ERA down. And so I get a ground ball, and our first baseman is just, you know, just happens sometimes. He just fell over his own feet. So the ball goes into right and give up two runs, you know, and they're earned. And it's like, man, this sucks. And I played the victim. You know, I played the victim. And next thing you know, when I came to, I'd given up four runs.
Wow.
Get out of the inning, obviously, you know, but four runs, and that was all because I felt sorry for myself out on the mound. And that's probably one of the biggest lessons I've ever learned in my entire career. It's just like, you know, if you don't lock into the next moment and continue to, you know, focus on that individual pitch, like Luke said, you know, to have a catcher that comes out there and can help give you perspective and say, hey, this is where we're going right now, because sometimes we need that. And
I just think the idea that you're keeping track of the ERA, I mean, that strikes me as sort of the beginning of the downfall, right? That the ERA is ticking in your head and you go, uh-oh, this
absolutely
is only going to get worse now. Right?
It's like, you know, like that's like a signpost for issues if you're, you know, because then you're no longer process-oriented. You're all on results.
I'm going to take a break right now and come back, talk to members of the Durham Bulls. We're meeting Minor League Baseball today on the State of Things. Stay with us. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, and joining me today, members of the Durham Bulls minor league team. Mark Sappington's a pitcher for the team, Luke Maley's a catcher, and Ozzie Timmons, one of the team's hitting coaches, and we're meeting minor league baseball today. Ozzie, let me ask you about these divisions, single A, double A, triple A. What's the difference? How do the teams, the major league teams, look at this system in terms of where they place a player?
Well, it usually starts with where you're drafted. You got high school kids getting drafted, like you say, junior college and college guys. The more seasoned college guys are usually started at a higher level. So you got short season, low A ball, you got short season, high A ball.
What's short season?
Short season starts after June, a June draft.
Okay.
So now you have college, high school kids getting drafted and college kids. So we got Princeton, West Virginia, which most of the high school kids go to. Mm-hmm. Most of the college kids go to the New York Penn League. So it's more of a, you know, where you're drafted at and your age.
Right.
So, and then once you get past that, you got your high A ball and your low A ball. So you have the low A ball, short season guys go to the low A ball, long season.
I'm getting sorry. Yeah.
Oh, no, but no, it's crazy. But as the older guys usually move up a little faster because, all right, you need to show what you can do, or right, we got these young kids coming also. So the levels basically is experience, and then as longer you play, the higher up you go. The better you play, the higher up you go, and the quicker you move. So it depends on how your level of play is, age sometimes, and it varies from different organizations. You got some organizations that move their young kids really quick. You got some organizations that move their young kids really slow, step by step by step. So it depends on how you perform, depending on where you're going to go the next year.
Luke, how does it – well, let me stick with you, actually, Ozzie, because this is kind of a coaching question. I've always wondered about this, especially for the team manager. I mean, it seems to me that their job is to develop talent, right,
right,
for the major league team. That can sometimes be at odds with winning a baseball game, it seems to me. There may be a time when, you know, the team has said, well, we sent this guy down, he's nursing an injury, pitch him three innings and pull him, and he's pitching great. You'd like to keep him in. You can't do that. I mean, this sort of thing. To what extent are you trying, as a manager, would a manager be trying to win games, and kind of how do those two ideas compete?
It's more of development. We're trying to develop guys to get to the major league level. So managing a game could be a teachable moment for a player. So in some situations, for example, last year, Mikey Matuk never bunted in his life. So the first time he go to the big leagues, he has to sacrifice bunt. He hadn't done it, but he got it done. But the thing is you have to teach these guys what's expected of them at the next level, which is the big leagues. So that's what we're focused on, getting these guys prepared for the big leagues. Sometimes we have to sacrifice wins because we're trying to get this guy prepared for the big leagues. So you're speaking about a guy come down for rehab, has to throw three innings, but he's throwing a no-hitter. He's still got to come out because we're preparing him to go back to the big leagues to pitch maybe next week. So we don't want to burn him out, and then he's not useful for the big league team. So our job is to get these players ready to go to the big leagues.
Then how does that affect you, Luke, as a player on a team in a game? Again, you can see where these two things come together pretty well. If you're playing well, you make it to the bigs. But in terms of winning the game, of, say, winning the, you know, the International League Championship or the Governor's Cup, I mean, how important is that to players who are looking to really move to the next level, quite honestly?
It's an individual game at its core, and there's no denying that. You know, I mean, nobody's going to really lie to you and say that, you know, that they're really, really, really trying to win a AAA title every year for the rest of their lives, because that's not true. I mean, what they're trying to do is get out of here and go to the big leagues. However, I've found in my experience that if you play for the team, that's the best way to play for yourself. If you have a way about you that tries to win ball games, number one, everybody's going to respect that. You're going to get labeled a label that you probably would be proud of, you know, especially looking back, which is really kind of the bigger picture anyway. But then also, you know, if you're playing for your teammates are going to play for you. So now all of a sudden, you know, you're getting them an RBI and they're getting you an RBI, you know, running hard or whatever it may be. So it all comes back.
So, Mark, you don't run into that problem where you were for one brief moment blaming the defense on your bad inning a minute ago when you realize that you're playing as a team. I mean, is that sort of how you look at the game?
Yeah. I mean, and it's like, how can I serve my teammates? Because if I have an outward focus, then I'm going to be the best version of myself, you know, because when I'm inwardly focused, you know, then I get selfish. Then I do things for me. I'm just caring about what's my perception out there. What's everybody think of me? And I don't know. I know that goes for my life or my faith or any of those things. It always reflects poorly on me. And the results don't typically line up with what you would want. So I think having that outward focus, you know, just like Luke said, you know, as a catcher, he has an outward focus. You know, it's like if he goes, you know, 0 for 3 at the plate, but still has to get me through an inning where I'm struggling, it's like, bam, he is locked in to helping me, because that's just part of that's his personality, but also he knows that's going to help the team. And, you know, then things, you know, it doesn't mean things are going to fall for him, but it's like it's an input-output relationship. He's going to give me his best input at all times, regardless of the output, as far as it, you know, goes for him. So, you know, and you really appreciate that. And when you have guys like that on your team, that's where winning teams come from, because then you can rely. And he talked about trust earlier, man. Trust is the epitome of you know, a value in this game.
Well, I wonder, again, if you think about the clubs themselves, the AAA clubs, and trying to nurture talent. Ozzie, again, you've been both a player and now a coach. Is it easier to coach players and nurture that talent if the team is doing well? Or because, as Luke said, it's at its heart, it's an individual game. Does it make it easier if the team's doing well?
It makes it a lot easier when you're winning, because it's easier to accept if you had a bad game. So say if Mark does go out there and give up 2 or 3 runs, if we win, he might not be happy with what he did, but it makes it a little easier to deal with when you win that game. So he's like, we got away with it. And that's the same thing as a player. You might go 0 for 4 and make 2 errors, but if we win that game, it's a little easier to take. So when you're winning, it makes everything a lot easier to deal with. And when you're winning, now that big league team started to say, we got winners down here. So they know what it takes to win and know what it looks like to win. So when they come up, they can help our team because they already know what they need to do. And sometimes you have to be selfish in some situations to make your team better. And that's not a bad thing, because sometimes you one-on-one with that pitcher. You're one-on-one when that ball comes to you. So sometimes failure can help make you better. And then, but as when you're winning, that failure kind of push to the side a little bit. But we see it as coaches and we work on it. But the good thing is, when we win, we can celebrate. Then it's easier to go talk to them. Hey, man, maybe you should have did this or do that.
What about the dynamics, though, in the clubhouse in a AAA team? Ozzie, I think you said earlier, you know, if you look at the hierarchy, AAA means you've been there longer, you've been playing longer. And I would guess that there are guys on the way up and there are some guys on the way down. They want to keep playing, but everybody realized maybe their prospects aren't as good anymore. They've been there a long time. It seems to me, and Luke, I'll put this question to you first, but I'll ask you all, the dynamics could be pretty rough if you're in a clubhouse with a guy who, you know, maybe has lost a dream or lost a threat. I don't know if that happens. And other guys who are, you know, sort of real aggressive about getting there. That seems to me a different dynamic than what you'd see in the major league team.
Oh, no question. Well, I mean, one of the first things that was said to me, I had a catching coordinator tell me when I went up to AAA, and I think he used the phrase, like, block out the noise. You know, don't surround yourself with those guys. And you kind of already know, we call them just the salty veteran. And every team's got them, and they're good, man. They're usually the funniest guys on the team. They're usually really, really valuable. But you're right. You know, there's going to need to be about 7 or 8 injuries at the same position before they ever get a chance again. You know, they're just playing to play, and they're finishing out their career, and so be it. But the dynamic can get rough. If you've got a guy that, you know, takes sarcasm or whatever it may, humor, and then starts to bring it towards negativity, it can affect younger guys, especially younger guys that are struggling. And you can see it just immediately, and you know what's going on. It's really, really clear, and it's really apparent. We're fortunate. I've been in AAA for 2 years. I haven't seen that, but you can see it even in the other dugouts too.
Is that something you have to deal with? Is it you? Do you step in as a coach when you see that thing happening, or do you,
you stand back? You just, like you said, you warn the younger guys, don't get caught up in this situation. And then the veteran guys, you go talk to them and say, look, man, you just got to keep playing. And then the beauty of the Rays is we're a small market team, so you actually still have a chance, even though you might not think you have a chance, because we will use this team, as you, I don't know if you noticed, but we do a lot of call-ups here. And sometimes it could be that old salty veteran if he's having a good year. But if he's coming in here complaining and moaning and stuff like that, then he's probably not going to get the call, because now you're not a good team player. And we don't need negativity up at a small market, because we do have a lot of young players up there.
Let's talk about making ends meet, Mark. You know, the big league contracts can be pretty nice, but down here in AAA, you know, you're not making that much. How do you have other jobs? Do you have to do second and third jobs? Do you have a second job while you're playing, you know, during the season?
You can't really. I mean, if you really want to chase the dream full on, you know, and that means eating well, sleeping well, having, you know, just like your environment needs to be conducive to growth. Not, you know, if you're trying to scrape by and pinch pennies on $2,000 a month or whatever you're making, it does not serve you at this point in your career. Because I mean, like, you get 750 people in the big leagues at any given time. You got 750 people in AAA. So there's the top 1,500 players as far as, you know, just like the hierarchy goes. If you're not willing to burn all the ships behind you and just move forward, it doesn't mean that you're ignorant, but if you're going to be cheap, I think you put yourself in a really, really tough situation. So I see guys who have families that maybe help them out, or, you know, even if you got guys, some guys rack up some credit card bills or they do things like that. I'm not saying that, you know, that's necessarily the best of choices, but, you know, if you really want it, like, you have to invest in yourself and be willing to say, hey, I'm going to put all my eggs in this basket and not look back. Because, you know, I think one of the other things you find is, like, in this game, guys that really, really worked hard and figured out that work ethic and decided to invest fully, you know, whether they make it or not, they're going to have opportunities outside the game to recapture that income or whatever the case may be. Because it just, you know, and I hate to use the term, it just works out. But it does just work out for them. And, you know, kind of the universe seems to conspire in their favor.
Your faith plays a pretty important part in your life.
Sure. No, yeah. Absolutely.
You mass every day?
You know, I go to mass probably 2 to 3 times a week. I go on Sundays, which is, you know, my favorite day of the week. And then, usually I try to find a way to go, one time during the week, if not two, if I can, but, you know, it just depends. But that's what keeps me grounded. I mean, and I know that, you know, and nobody wants like Luke talked about, negativity in the clubhouse. It's just, it can be cancerous. And, you know, just to have that, you know, if you're grounded in something greater than yourself, I think that gives you an opportunity to invest in others and really just love them for them amidst your own struggles and not be self-immersed.
Well, talk about what it takes physically, Luke. Talk about the regime that you put yourself through and what a baseball player has to do year-round to really stay healthy.
But it's it constantly changes too. You know, that's the thing that's also interesting about AAA when you're a younger guy like myself, is your body's still changing when you're 24, 25. You're not, as a catcher, I'm not the same catcher now that I was when I was 19. I'm not going to be the same catcher when I'm 30 that I am now. So you're finding different routines. You're finding different things that help you get right, whether it be, you know, getting in a whirlpool for 5 minutes or whatever it may be. But the rigors that Mark was talking about, you know, fully committing or putting all your eggs in one basket, I mean, it really is the truth. And I remember coming up, you could kind of tell the guys that were drafted a little later that were almost playing baseball as a hobby. You know, they didn't really come out and say it, but you could kind of tell, gone. I mean, literally in a couple months. And that's just the way it is.
So I have to ask you, I wonder about some of the guys who were drafted earlier who thought that they were maybe gifted beyond their real gifts and hadn't worked as hard. Some of those later draft choices might have had the dream and said, okay, I was drafted late, but I'm going to show you.
That's true. That definitely goes into it. I don't want to make it that simplistic because there's a lot of first rounders or guys that are picked high that they don't work out. And it really wasn't an entitlement issue. It was just sort of a personality issue. Mm-hmm. You know, they just didn't have the right makeup or whatever it is to kind of, you know, they have all the tools in the world, but they just can't kind of put them together. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it happens and you hate to see it happen, but you know, like you said, it gives guys that are drafted later a chance, and that's when the really cool stories happen.
Does the physical, the workout, the routines that you have to go through to stay, and as you suggest, as you get a little bit older, those routines might have to last a little bit longer, and certainly they change. Does that get easier just because of habit, because you've done it and it's paid off, or does it get harder because you're older?
Both. That's the best way I can say it. And it changes day to day, too.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking earlier about and Mark said it, and I think when it's easy to be a professional when things are going right. Mm. You know, when you're struggling, you know, that's when you have a tendency where, well, maybe I'll take a little bit of a day off, maybe I won't do this, maybe I won't do that. So that the guys that are able to do it day in and day out and be the same guy, like he said before, you know, those are the guys that typically have pretty good careers.
And Ozzie, you've got a career. You're still doing it. I mean, that's proof that you can make this, you can actually make this a career.
Oh, yeah, you can. I mean, that's something, you got to want to do it. I mean, this game is tough. And then going from playing to coaching, I went into coaching because I wanted to give back what I've learned from guys that taught me as I came up. And so that's the beauty of it. And then when you see people accept it and run with it, that's when you get the satisfaction as a coach. And then you're always trying to tell these guys that it's not easy. And just like we're comparing the first round picks, they've always been the best at everything, everywhere they've been. Now they come to pro ball and everybody's really good, so they figure they still don't have to work. But that's when you have to work even more because somebody's trying to take your job. And if you think of it that way, every time you step on the field or every time you're not putting in work to get better, somebody else is to take your job. So, but yeah, work, you gotta take care of yourself.
Was it difficult for you to acknowledge the fact that it's time for you to make a transition? I mean, to take off the uniform?
No, it wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't because when I was ending my career, I was playing independent ball in Atlantic City. And it was like, this is not where I want to be. But I finished this year out, and I knew I wanted to go into coaching to give back because I've seen how the game has been changing a little bit. So you try to teach guys, what you were taught. And coming up with the Cubs, we were always taught to run balls out hard, do this, do that. So you still try to teach that and instill that in guys because it looks good, number one. And then the team up there, they respect it.
Great to talk with all of you. Such a pleasure to meet each and every one of you. Ozzie Timmons, one of the team's hitting coaches. I'm talking about the Durham Bulls. Luke Maley is a catcher, and Mark Sappington, a pitcher for the team. Guys, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you for listening to The State of Things. You can find out everything you need to know at our website, stateofthings.org. It's a program that's produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, and Charlie Sheldon Ormond. Robin Copley's our technical director, Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.